CQ, CQ, this is KD0CDQ, Mike here. Welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. The program tonight will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the general class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening, letting it drop. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS, S-C-A-R-S, server at either EchoLink node number 96140, IRLP node 9614, or All-Star node AST 27404. For those who are interested, please contact Mike, KD0CDQ, via email at VOIP at SCARS, S-S-C-A-R-S-V-O-I-P.com to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connecting into the course, letting it drop again. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at scarsvoip.com. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements obtained to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at scarsvoip.com. The session this evening will be recorded and be posted on the website at www.scarsvoip.com. Turning my recorder on right now, letting it drop and give you the final information. For all of the class members and instructors, it's extremely important that we stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our sessions. First, do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening program? Listening. Tonight we have two fine instructors. We have W4RF Gerald, or the Chief, in Nashville, Tennessee. He'll be giving us questions, as will N-O-7-O George in Nottingham, Maryland. So we got an instructor in Tennessee, an instructor in Maryland. So between the two, they're going to try to give you some fun tonight with the questions and answers. Just listen closely, and if you observe the little question box there, I'll try to put in the question numbers to make sure we're all on the same page. Okay, I don't know who's going to be starting it tonight, so I'm going to turn it over to either the Chief or George. Whoever's got the first question, it's all yours. KD0CDQ monitoring.
KD0CDQ and the South Cars General Class Review Course. This is N070. It's my privilege and pleasure to be here with Chief W4RFJ. To be your facilitators tonight for this general class prep course. Thank you so much for being here. You know, and just one thought as you study or review or work along with us in the course. We cover a lot of material, and we're here two nights a week, and then there are 5 days in between the Sunday and the Tuesday nights. So it's difficult to provide the same type of motivation for each of you as you review that might be possible if it were a more formal classroom course. So finding the motivation is going to be your responsibility, but maybe if you think of a goal or objective or like a fence you want to cross or jump over a head, then once you get over the fence, you will have a good general class preparation. So, my pleasure to be with you, and we are going to be starting with the question G2E06. Let me reset. All right, so we're going to start out tonight with section G2D of the sample questions. Now, when we give you the A, B, and C, D selections tonight, please remember that those are going to be rearranged on the FCC exam. So the important part is for you to understand the knowledge behind the question and not memorize the A, B, C, or D. The A, B, C, or D will do you no good whatsoever during the test. So that means having to work hard to understand the context of the question. But hey, you can do it. No, you can't. And by the way, Chief wants to clarify that he's not in Tennessee. But the way he's been a world traveler lately, he'll tell you when he comes up later where he and the Admiral are tonight. Resetting. All right, under G2E, this covers the topics of digital operating procedures. And question G2E06 is a question about radio teletype. What is the most common frequency shift for radio teletype emissions in the amateur HF bands? Your choices are 85 hertz as a shift, 170 hertz as a shift, 425 hertz as a shift, or 850 hertz as a shift. Now this is a shift. This is not the actual tone itself that's being sent. This is how far apart the two tones are for the mark and the space of the ready signal. So that being said, let me open it up for any check-ins, people that want to let us know they're here to say hello, and also to ask you for your guess on the right answer. Please call now. This is N070. Over. Well, very quiet there, so how about that's enough time for the RF circuits. All right, the answer to G2E06 is answer of 170 hertz shift. That means that the two tones are 170 hertz apart. Just to give you an idea about how apart what that sounds like, on a piano, the middle C is at 440 hertz. So if you cut that pitch, you know, like down lower in half, that's about what the shift is. But that's not what the actual emission sounds like. The frequencies of emission of the mark in space are 1,275 hertz and 1,445 hertz. Now, I mentioned those in case you happen to get that question on the test. And you'll notice that 1,445 minus 1,275 equals the 170. So that's how you can hopefully remember that in case you kind of get stuck with the memory of the answer to this question, G2E06. Let me reset. All right, our next question is G2E14, G2E14. This is also about radio teletype, and it is asking us the question, what could be wrong if you cannot decode a radio teletype or other FSK, meaning frequency shift keying, signal, even though it is apparently tuned in properly? Now let me read that without defining the abbreviations. What could be wrong if you cannot decode an RTTY or other FSK signal even though it is apparently tuned in properly? Resetting. Here are the choices you have to pick from. The mark and space frequencies may be reversed, causing the problem. You may have selected the wrong baud rate as the second choice. You may be listening on the wrong sideband as the third choice, or your fourth choice is all of those problems are correct about what could be wrong if you cannot decode a radio teletype or FSK signal. I would love to have someone check in, let us know that you're there, and say hi. And if you wish to also go ahead and take a guess at the answer as well. So please call now. This is NS70.
KQHA.
Go right ahead, Fred.
Okay, very good. This is Fred, KQHA. And I believe the correct answer is all of the above would be correct. This is Fred, KQHA.
And Fred is absolutely correct that all three of those conditions of receiving, mark and space frequencies being reversed, wrong baud rate selected, or wrong sideband being listened to, would cause problems decoding a radio teletype signal. So thank you, Fred, yes. And Annette, this, again, you're listening to the South Cars Amateur Radio Service General Class Preparation Course. And I do want to recognize that Fred has been kind enough to let us run the course here on Sunday night at the same time that his RagChu normally runs on Sunday night at 7 p.m. Now, Saturday and Sunday night, Fred has a remarkable RagChu event. It's leisurely paced. The topics are whatever you decide to bring. Sometimes topics of interest might be presented. And it's a good time to rack up some time on your amateur license. So please drop by and say hey to Fred on the Saturday and Sunday evenings on this conference server at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, let me reset. All right, our next question comes from the next sub-element in the FCC question pool. The sub-element G3 deals with radio wave propagation. And subtopic A, G3A, addresses sunspots and solar radiation, ionospheric disturbances, and propagation forecasting and indices. The reason why these topics are important is that, yes, we can transmit because we have our licenses. We can receive, and even shortwave listeners can receive. No license is needed to receive, only to transmit. And the transmission and reception will be affected by sunspots, solar radiation, ionospheric disturbances, and propagation of events. So that's why this is important to us, resetting. All right, so let's look at question G3A01. What is the significance of the sunspot number about HF propagation? The first choice is higher sunspot numbers generally indicate a greater probability of good propagation at higher frequencies. Your second choice would be that lower sunspot numbers generally indicate greater probability of sporadic E propagation. The third choice is a zero sunspot number indicates that radio propagation is not possible on any band. And the fourth choice is a zero sunspot number indicates undisturbed conditions. So let's see if anyone would like to come aboard, check in, say hi, and perhaps give us the what you think is the right answer. Please call now. This is NO70.
Six, Victor.
Go right ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Thank you, George. KY6V here. Good evening, everybody. I just wanted to take you back a question or two on a comment that you made, George. I'll let somebody else field this question. I want you to tell everybody that you're a very polished percussionist. But you made a statement that was erroneous, sir, when you said that middle C was 440 hertz. 440 hertz is A in the scale. The sixth note up from C, and 440 is considered the tuning note for orchestras. They call it concert A. And I'll throw my hat at it, and I'll say your first answer on this last question. Go ahead, George, KY6V.
Thank you, Gordon. I am so embarrassed. yes, there is a difference in tuning of timpani, which have a different reference tuning. Okay, yes. Thank you, Gordon. Appreciate that. And everyone, listen to Gordon. He knows what he's talking about. He's an accomplished guitar player, and so is his son. And that's something you'll get that is delightful to listen to if you ever have a chance. And so, Gordon, please go ahead with your selection for the answer, KY6V070.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had. I'm picking your first answer of the group of four. The higher sunspot numbers generally indicate a greater probability of good propagation, etc. Over.
Thank you, Gordon. And yes, that is absolutely correct. Now, class, I'd like to break this question down a little more because there's some good information. If you'll check the text box, I put in a URL that you may be interested in that is an excellent resource for solar sunspot conditions, solar wind, X-ray events, all of the above. There are graphs, there are video loops of solar events, and I commend that link to you from our U.S. government. Let's look at each of these selections. Gordon chose the correct answer. Higher sunspot numbers generally indicate a greater probability of good propagation at higher frequencies. That's absolutely correct. Now, lower sunspot numbers do not indicate a greater probability of sporadic E because sporadic E is dependent upon having some differences in radiation activity or level within the ionosphere. So you have to have some energy going in, and lower sunspot numbers, you don't have as much energy going in. Therefore, a zero sunspot number, you would think, might indicate that radio propagation is not possible on any band, but that's not true. You can actually have radio propagation when there's a zero sunspot number. Otherwise, we would have no transmissions at all, no GPS signals for our maps in the car, nothing at all if radio propagation was not possible on any band with a zero sunspot number. So it cannot be the answer there. A zero sunspot number indicates a low disturbance of conditions, but undisturbed, no, really there usually are no absolutes in Mother Nature. So that's how you could make the choice if and when you see that question on your test. Any questions so far before I move on to the next question? Please call in on 7-0, over. All right, nothing heard. So we're going to continue in the G3A category of sunspots, solar radiation, ionospheric disturbances, and propagation forecasting and indices with question G3A03. The question is, approximately how long does it take the increased ultraviolet and X-ray radiation from solar flares to affect radio propagation on Earth? So how long would it take for a solar event, the effects of that, to travel from the sun to the Earth? The choices are 28 days, or another choice is 1 to 2 hours, or another choice is 8 minutes, or another choice is 20 to 40 hours. So that's either 28 days, 1 to 2 hours, 8 minutes, or 20 to 40 hours. Would anyone like to come in with your answer for this question? Please call now, 870.
Okay, this is K2HA, and I believe that the correct answer there is 8 minutes for the for traveling to the Earth. And let me tell you, on the previous question, sunspot cycle is at a low right now, and if you can, George, you can do anything to increase it, I'd appreciate that. This is Fred, K2HA.
K2HA and the South Cars General Class Review Session, N070. Fred, you're absolutely correct. It is takes about 8 minutes for the ultraviolet and X-ray radiation from solar flares to travel to the Earth's ionosphere and have an effect then upon impact. It's 8 minutes because it is radiation that travels at the speed of light. So that's why it's 8 minutes. Now the next question is going to be another side to propagation which you want to be careful and pay attention to so that you don't confuse the two and keep your answer correct on the exam itself. And that is going to be the last question for my part tonight, and then Chief is going to pick it up with more questions for what is to be covered tonight. So, Fred, absolutely correct. Let me reset. You know, and class, Fred is correct that we're at a very minimum in the sunspot cycle. What is the sunspot cycle? Well, that's all to good information that you will want to know as a ham operator so that you can plan for your ham radio activities of your interest. Things like, you know, the DX Century Club, worked all states, worked all continents, being able to contact friends that you have not been able to contact because of poor propagation in other DX locations, DX meaning long distance communications. So it, Fred is right. It's pretty abysmal out there right now. And let me, I'll put that link here in the text box once again. And if you do take a look at that page, you will find that these answers will make a lot more sense as well. So are there any other thoughts or comments about question G3A03? Please come now. Over. All right, nothing hurts, so let me move on to my last question to cover for the evening, and then Chief, the B4FJ, is going to come in and help us with some more preparation, and I appreciate Chief being here to do that tonight, too. So our next question is G3A03. Approximately how long... The next question is G3A10. What causes HF propagation conditions to vary periodically in a roughly 28-day cycle? Now, remember I said a moment ago that we're going to look at another side of this radiation. We talked about 8 minutes, and now we're looking at something that's 28 days. And it's important to understand the difference here. All right, so G3A10, what causes HF propagation conditions to vary periodically in a roughly 28-day cycle? The first choice is long-term oscillations in the upper atmosphere. Second choice is cyclic variation in Earth's radiation belts. The third choice is the sun's rotation on its axis. And the fourth choice is the position of the moon in its orbit. So that would be your possible answers. Anyone like to check in or provide their guess for the answer, please call now. This is NO70.
Kilo Delta 4 Oscar Victor India. Over. Go right ahead, Pete.
All right. Let's get to the bottom of this and say a T, the sun's rotation on its axis. Over.
That is absolutely correct. The sun's rotation on its axis. And you have that correct. So thank you, Pete. That is a good answer. All right. So with that, let me turn it over to Chief to be for RFJ, and he will have some more questions for us. So let me turn it back to KD0CDQ for anything, any other check-ins, then he can pass it on to W4RFJ. So thank you for being there tonight, Michael, KD0CDQ, NL70. Over.
Yes, thank you, George. I think everyone appreciates the clearness of your voice and your communication skills. Thank you so much for those questions. They were very well done and very well understood. Now we're going to jump over to the Chief, who has moved quickly to Pennsylvania. He's in Pennsylvania. I said Tennessee. That's what I get for looking at QRZ, and now that's what happens. So W4RF Gerald, otherwise known as the Chief, will now take over with his questions. Before he does, are there any questions? Does anyone have a question on what's been covered or anything related? Over.
Romeo Fox Juliet.
Go right ahead, Romeo Fox Juliet.
Yeah, Mike, this is Chief. I'm just wondering what you're looking up on QRZ, because my call is Whiskey 4 Romeo Fox Juliet, not W4RF. So I just wanted to make sure you got that squared away.
Yeah, I must have looked up your other brother. I probably hit the wrong key because I got some fellow that was in Tennessee. Okay, Chief, I know you're in Pennsylvania. I can see you almost waving the flag from here, but the trees get in the way. Okay, Chief, it's all yours. Go for it. KD0CDQ.
Okay, fine business. This is W4RFJ. My name is Roger, and my next question is Golf 3 Bravo 02. Golf 3 Bravo 02. What factors affect the MUF? And I've got four answers here. Path, distance, and location is one of them. Another one is time of day and season. The third one is solar radiation and ionospheric disturbances. And the fourth, but not least, is all these choices are correct. I guess I'll open the mic up for anybody who wants to take a stab at that question. This is W4RFJ, looking for check-ins.
Six, Victor.
Oh, go ahead there. Oh, I'm sorry. I think that's Mike's job. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes. Go ahead, Gordon. It's all yours. Over.
Thank you, guys. I'm sitting back here smiling and laughing at the same time. I just wanted to say that the answer to that, I believe, is all of these choices are correct, unless you're mistakenly looking it up on QRZ. Go ahead, Chief, from KY6V.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Thank you very much there, Captain. You are absolutely correct. First of all, I want to take a moment to define MUF. That is the maximum usable frequency. With all the propagation models and the math and all the observations that are taken concerning radio propagation, the maximum usable frequency, and there's also this thing called the lowest usable frequency, and it has to do with how our signals are propagating. And the captain is correct. The path, distance, and location, the time of day and season, and solar radiation and ionospheric disturbances all are factors in the maximum usable frequency. Did I do that one okay, Mike? KD0CDQ on the net. This is W4RFJ.
Very well done, Chief. You've got the stage. You've got the deck. You got the quarter deck. Over.
Okay, fine business, Mike. Thank you very much. The next question I have on my list is Golf 3 Bravo 05. G3 Bravo 05. Let me grab a nickel. What usually happens to radio waves with frequencies below the MUF and above the LUF when they are sent into the ionosphere? One of the answers is they are bent back to Earth, or they pass through the ionosphere, or they are amplified by interaction with the ionosphere, and the last option is they are bent and trapped in the ionosphere to circle the Earth. So with that, let's see if anybody wants to take a stab at those four answers for G3B05. Please call. This is W4RFJ.
Okay, this is Fred K2HA. I'll try the an answer. I think it is they're bent back to Earth. I think that is the correct answer. And I notice one of the things that they've missed on these questions is they don't speak too much about ground wave, because usually you could always make a propagation close by on ground wave. This is Fred, K2HA.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Fred, absolutely. The answer is they are bent back to Earth. You know, when you talk about the maximum usable frequency and the lower usable frequency, it's pretty much any frequency in between that are going to be bent back to Earth. If you go above the MUF or below the LUF, they will pass through the ionosphere, or they can be, they actually won't ever get amplified. And as far as trapping anything in the ionosphere, I don't think I've ever heard of that happening. I have heard of ducting between temperature inversions, but anyway, they are definitely bent back to Earth. Okay. Am I good to go for the next one, Mike? KD0CDQ, W4RFJ?
Yes, the deck is clear. Go ahead, KD0CDQ. This is this South Coast Amateur Radio Service, and we're doing the general test questions. Come on and listen in if you're anywhere around. Over.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. The next question on my list is Golf 3, Charlie 04. Golf 3, Charlie 04. Let me grab a nickel. Okay, now we're getting into a term that is kind of hard to explain, but easy to understand. What does the term critical angle mean, as used in radio wave propagation? One of the answers is the long path azimuth of a distant station. Another answer is the short path azimuth of a distant station. The third possible answer is the lowest takeoff angle that will return a radio wave to Earth under specific ionospheric conditions. And last but not least, the highest takeoff angle that will return a radio wave to Earth under specific ionospheric conditions. Now, Mike, do I need to reread those?
Well, it was clear to me. It's clear to me. I don't know if anyone else needs to do it again. If you wish to, you can go ahead and do it again if you wish. Over.
Nope, you're the one that's keeping me straight. So if you understood the answers, let's see if we can take some check-ins and see if we can get somebody to take a stab at G3C04. This is W4RFJ.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you, Chief. KY6V here. I just wanted to impose and let you comment on this also, Chief, and that is this angle of radiation is an interesting area within itself. And I'm going to give you an example to ponder here that's for the students, and maybe you'd like to comment on it also, Chief. A vertical antenna, as an example, used on HF, has a very low takeoff angle from that particular antenna as opposed to a dipole or something else. So what that means is that the takeoff angle being low goes out further in distance before it is reflected off the ionosphere and back down to Earth, giving you a longer distance under normal conditions than you would get off of some other antenna with a higher angle of radiation. Do you want to comment on that, Chief? KY6V, over.
Oh, yeah, certainly. You're not going to get as high of an angle or incidence angle hitting the ionosphere with a vertical antenna because of the null that you get toward the top of it. So, that's a given, so to speak. You're absolutely correct. So your incident angle of reflection, which should be equal to or pretty close to your incoming angle, should be the angle that it's reflected off the ionosphere. Absolutely, you're going to talk further away, but that also sets you up for not being able to talk to people that are closer beyond ground wave, but closer than that first skip zone that your signal pops into. If that makes any sense, I hope. W4RFJ.
Observation.
Go right ahead with your observation. Over.
Thank you very much. This is K2HA. This is starting to sound like some baseball commentators talking about the takeoff angle of the ball when somebody hits a home run in the ballpark. That's something they highlight now in the ball games, and it's interesting the comparison between the two. I wonder how they do correlate. This is Fred, K2HA.
Well, Fred, I guess the one thing that can be confusing here is depending on the type of antenna that you have, the takeoff angle from your station up to that ionospheric ionized layer, that ionized layer, depending on the frequency and the density and where it's located, etc., 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 will definitely. I'm seeing that I didn't read the answer, so it is definitely the highest. Wait a minute. So the critical angle, which I think we kind of got away from the question, the critical angle is dependent upon frequency, and it is the highest angle that you can actually bounce the signal off. Anything higher than that reflecting angle, anything higher than the critical angle will actually go through the ionosphere. It won't reflect. So I hope I made that clear. Clear as mud, anyway. Mike, what do you think?
I think if you like chocolate, mud looks pretty close. You're pretty close to explaining it very well. I think you explained it very well. The more we go, the more complex it's going to get, I think. But it's up to you. If you want to explain it some more, go right ahead, Chief. Over.
A comment and a 7-up.
Go right ahead, George.
Hey, Chief, I really like your explanation, and your explanation brought to mind an analogy to my mind, especially given the recent anniversary of the moon landing and so forth, and which brings to mind escape velocity, that you have to have a certain takeoff angle and a certain velocity to escape the Earth's gravitational pull and get into a synchronous orbit and then have another angle that shoots you off toward the moon or your destination. So if one has too low an angle upon the takeoff from Cape Canaveral with the rocket ship, you're not going to get up there where you need to be. You're just going to get, you won't get high enough. You won't get through. Your signal or your aircraft won't hit that sweet spot that would let the signal bounce back and forth. It's just going to go and follow that capsule to the moon. W4FJ, NO70.
Six, Victor.
Right ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, just a quick little story, guys. KY6V here, talking about all these angles. I want to tell you the story that, my father, who was an old-time ham, was my Elmer. And when I was still young and wet behind the ears and getting interested in the hobby, and he was teaching me this and that, he said to me one day, and I've never forgotten this, he says, Gordon, one of these days, after you have called CQ on some band at some time, you're going to be sitting in front of your receiver, and you're going to hear your CQ call coming back to you. Meaning that I didn't get reflected in the ionosphere. I went straight through it, went out into space, hit some planetary subject way, way out, and it finally got back to me, and there I was again. Just think about that one. Go ahead, Chief. KY6V, over.
Well, I got to tell you from experience, that's a neat story, Gordon. One of the things that let me back up a little bit. I'm getting ahead of myself. I guess the neat thing about propagation, when you talk about getting up on HF and trying to talk to somebody, and you're dealing with short path and long path, meaning the short path, which is direct, which if that's good to go, you get nice communications. But if your signal's going the opposite direction and coming back, it makes it hard to talk to anybody because you're hearing your own signal a few seconds after you received the original signal of the opposing station. So anyway, the signals have a tendency to bounce off of the ionosphere and the ground. People don't realize that, but that's been known to happen. Okay, let me get on to the next one, which has to do with Gulf 3 Charlie 10. Yeah, I know everybody can get into this. G3 Charlie 10. I guess, Mike, are you ready for me to go with this next one?
Yes, go ahead. I went and re-entered the same one again. Go ahead.
I'm watching the display to make sure I'm not repeating, and I'm trying to scroll. Okay, now this also has to do with propagation. What is near vertical incidence sky wave, also known as NVIS propagation? The four possibilities are propagation near the maximum usable frequency. The next possibility is short distance MF or HF propagation using high elevation angles. The third possibility is long path HF propagation at sunrise and sunset. And the last possibility is double hop propagation near the lowest usable frequency. Okay, let's take some check-ins and see if we can get somebody to get this one right or wrong. W4RFJ.
K2HA. And I believe that the correct answer here is the short distance MF or RF propagation using the high elevation angles. I believe that's the correct answer. This is Fred, K2HA.
Okay, Fred, outstanding. You got it absolutely correct. One of the neat things about this particular type of propagation is, and the way we do get this type of propagation, is you actually lower your antenna. Usually it's a dipole type of antenna, and you lower it down toward the ground. I think they use a distance of 1 to 3 feet. And basically what it does is it provides a higher angle of radiation that goes almost straight up. And basically what it does is it brings your skip in closer rather than further. It brings it in closer, which allows you to talk to more local stations on HF. Does that make any make sense to everybody? Let's see if anybody has any comments on NBIS. This is W4RFJ. Okay, hearing none, let's move on to the next one, which is Golf 4 Alpha 02. Golf 4 Alpha 02, W4RFJ. All right, what is one advantage of selecting the opposite or reverse sideband when receiving CW signals on a typical HF transceiver? Let me grab a nickel. One possibility is the interference from impulse noise will be eliminated. Another possibility is more stations can accommodate can be accommodated within a given signal passband. Third possibility, it may be possible to reduce or eliminate interference from other signals. And last but not least, accidental out-of-band operation can be prevented. All right, let's take some check-ins, see if anybody's got the correct answer to this one. This is W4RFJ. Okay, hearing none. The answer is, it may be possible to reduce or eliminate interference from other signals. I've actually had the opportunity of practicing this today. I made a nice contact on 40 meters CW and was trying to get him direct, but was having trouble with an adjacent CW station. So I switched to lower sideband, and lo and behold, when I was receiving on lower sideband, the other CW station kind of went away in my audio. So I was able to eliminate some close-by interference. Anybody have any comments or questions concerning this question? This is W4RFJ.
Yeah, 6 Victor.
All right, go ahead, Gordon. I didn't know if Mike was going to let you do that or not. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, Chief. KY6V. I'm glad you brought this up, because that's an important point. You know, there's a lot of talk about using narrow filters for CW in your IF passband. And, you know, they do a grand job, too. You can narrow things down so much that you can't hear anything else but the signal that you want to listen to. But this changing sidebands is an excellent approach also, because more times than not, by changing the sideband opposite to what the other people may be using, just tightens up the skirts. So I'm glad you brought that up, Skipper, Chief Son. I think I'm going to send you a gold star on that one. Over.
Observation, KY6V.
Well, it's a good thing I was having trouble getting my program to come back up correctly. Go ahead, Pete. Let's have your observation. I don't want to hear about rain. I've had enough of that.
No, it's all about the subject. Now, if you're listening to CW signal and you're in reverse mode, I hope I am clearing it with the chief in control of the station. I hope I'm not stepping over the eggshells here. But if you're going to do that reverse thing inside there, I've never been through this exercise, never did this. Does it change the tone? Is it tone orientated or what? Describe that for us, please. Katie Foster, Virginia.
Okay, I think I understood the question to be, first of all, Pete, your signal's really, really weak. I could barely understand you. But I think you're asking, does it change the tone? Well, it can, depending on the radio. Some radios have different offsets built into them, and it can. But it's not enough that you can't make out the code, but a lot of times it will knock out any interference of a station that's close by. I hope I answered your question, Pete.
I thank you very much. Yes, I put my seashell back in place again so I can be heard. But anyway, thank you very much for the comeback. Katie Foster, Rick Jr., back to the program.
Outstanding. That was much, much better. And I also wanted to thank the captain for the gold star. I don't get much of those. I usually get yelled at by the admiral, but don't get many of those gold stars. All right, so I'm coming down to the last question that I have for the evening. Mike, are you ready for the last but not least question?
Oh, I am ready for the finale, Chief. I am ready. Go ahead. KD0CDQ.
Alrighty then. The last question on my list is Golf 4 Alpha 05. Now, this question has to do with ALC, and ALC to me is a very, very hard thing to explain, or to get people to really understand what's going on. The question goes like this: what is a reason to use automatic level control, ALC, with an RF power amplifier? Now, the possible answers are to balance the transmitter audio frequency response. The second option is to reduce harmonic radiation. The third option is to reduce distortion due to excessive drive. And last but not least, to increase overall efficiency. So let's see if we can get some check-ins and just throw your call out there, please, so Mike can keep control of the net. This is W4RFJ.
H-A.
It looks like Fred. Fred's got a question. Go right ahead, please. Over.
Yes, it's very frustrating when somebody doesn't use proper tuning or automatic level control on their kilowatt or their amplifier. Because oftentimes it makes the signal so wide and sometimes distorted. It's really important to use that, and you can reduce that distortion due to excessive drive, and that's the main reason to use it. So, and that's why they build it in there, but you got to use it. This is Fred, K2HA.
Well, Fred, you're absolutely correct. One of the things I wanted to make sure that everybody understood is that ALC is good even without an RF power amplifier. I mean, it really does help with the RF power amplifier, but for any transmitted signal. And I try to explain that even though your meters don't show that you're putting out maximum power, you are, and that ALC meter does not have to move at all. As a matter of fact, I personally adjust my ALC so I can just barely see it flicker on the meter. That tells me that I'm right at the edge of possibly overdriving my signal or my RF energy. So anyway, just some food for thought. I do a lot of extra reading and all these questions so that I have brought myself back up to par. You know, when you don't play with this stuff very much, yep, Pete, you're absolutely right. Overmodulation, that's what the ALC control helps you eliminate. And let's see, I guess that's it for my end. If anybody has any more comments, changes, and or deletions, please call. This is W4RFJ.
And a 7-0 follow-up on propagation, please.
Go right ahead, George. You got the floor. Over.
Thank you. And Chief, if I may beg your indulgence, please, sir, because as you were talking about propagation, it struck me that you gave us an answer to another question in the question pool that I'd like to mention. Is that okay, Chief? Over.
Oh, I don't know, George. You know. Oh, go ahead. I'm kidding. W4RFJ.
Chief is my Elmer, everyone. This is the South Cars General Class Prep Course. Chief is my Elmer. Okay, so, I mean, he's got me in good stead here, as well as so many others of the conference. You know, talking about the short path and long path propagation and, you know, the reflection of waves and how will they come back. You know, there's a characteristic of skywave signals where short path and long wave propagation arrive back, but because they're short and long, they take different travel times, and that means that you're going to hear a slightly delayed echo. So that is question G3B01. Question G3B01, a characteristic of skywave signals arriving at your location by both short path and long path propagation means a slightly delayed echo might be heard. And, you know, Chief's comments and observations just zeroed me in right on that question. So, hey, Chief, thanks for the extra credits tonight. W4FJ, NO70, over.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. This is W4RFJ. I remember I was at Boy Scout camp up north of Philadelphia here, and I had a wire run out to a flagpole from underneath the mess hall, and I had a bunch of Boy Scouts in there. We were talking to somebody over in England, I think. And the first 5 minutes of the conversation went very well, and then all of a sudden we started hearing him both short path and long path, and I'll tell you what, it just spoiled the QSO because we couldn't understand the guy anymore. However, I did learn that there was a way to battle that. That's why a lot of hams use directional antennas, because it will reduce some of that long path propagation and make it easier to talk short path. All right, I'm done. You guys have a great day, and I wish everybody the best of luck in their upgrade to general. And I certainly hope that everybody listening will make an effort to contact us, any of the instructors, with any questions you might have. We're here to help. Mike, I'm going to pass it over to you. I don't know if anybody else has any other comments. This is W4RFJ.
This is KD0CDQ. This is the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. We're doing general class questions. That's what's going on here tonight. Is there anyone else would like to make a comment while we have the Chief's ear and we also have the ear of George, both listening in? Do you have any questions for either one? Please give your call sign now, please. Over.
Six, Victor.
AK.
There's some new voices. Okay, we'll take six, Victor, first. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. KY6V. I just wanted to thank our two instructors tonight, both Roger and George. Nice job. reminded me on this path problem, you know, distance is a factor in that echo too, guys, which you both know, I know. Reminds me of a story when I was in the control room at Naval Comm State Guam while I was in the Navy, and I picked up one of the microphones and said, "This is Guam testing." That signal went from Guam to the Hawaiian Islands. From the Hawaiian Islands, it was relayed to the United States. From the United States, it was relayed into Europe. From Europe, it was relayed back to us. And after I said, "This is a test from Guam," it came back and said, "This is a test from Guam." Just like it came right out of the blue. Let me buy a nickel. Mike, you might want to emphasize that in the closing of this class tonight, we are now at 37.5% completion of the overall course. And we will reach 50% completion after the course class number 4 is conducted on Tuesday. So if everybody is keeping up with their homework, they're going through the class assignments for the night, we're in good shape. Back to you, Mike, KY6V, over.
Thank you for that accounting, Gordon. I know we're at 37.5%. Now we all know we're 35.7% through the question pool, and after next session, we'll be at 50% through the question pool. I must say that, Chief, those questions that you just handled were extremely interesting to me, talking about the CW and about the Echo. That was so interesting. I was really taking that in. So, and I thank you, Chief, and George, both. The questions were very well done tonight. Not they're not always well done. They always are done well. But I really appreciate that, especially at the end there, Chief. That was good explanations for me. Does anyone else have a comment they'd like to make? Please give your call sign and we'll give you the floor. KD0CDQ, listening for some more.
H.A.
What do you know? There's Fred. Go right ahead, Fred.
Yeah, well, I just want to say thank you to everybody that for presenting those questions. Stimulating for thought, and especially the ones about antennas, because ham radio operators love to construct antennas of all different styles, put them at all different heights, and try to see what they'll do with different angles of radiation. So it's a lot of fun. This is Fred, K2HA.
I see that KD4OVI, Pete, has a, would like to have a word with you, Gordon, KY6 Victor. Are you available? Over.
Yeah, I'm here, unless you want to close the net, and I can pick up Pete after that, whatever is appropriate. Over.
Pete, does it involve any of the questions we've just covered? Does it involve the questions? Over.
Katie Flosky, Victor, yes, it does have some bearing on the question. Over.
So, Pete, please go ahead with it now, even while our recording's going, so we can get it on the same session. Over.
KY6B, Katie Flosky, Victor, India.
Yeah, I'm all ears, Pete. Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Regarding propagation, it's probably frequency orientated. We're talking about HF, VHF, and HF, and super high frequencies. They probably don't have very much of a bearing, which I'm talking about. But we're primarily talking about HF. Wouldn't it be conceivable that what your dad was telling you about you hearing your own voice after so many cycles passed by, that would be a really interesting thing to happen, hearing your own voice, let's say about 2 or 3 seconds after you are finished with your transmission? That would be a very interesting thing to see. Katie Flosky, Victor, India.
Well, I'm not sure that I got the total influx of the question, but it seemed to me I heard something about a happy hour in there, and are you starting to hear yourself after too many happies? Pete, generally speaking, what we have been discussing this evening is that depending on how the atmosphere propagation is working at the time and everything that's involved with it from your equipment standpoint, that it is possible that you've got two paths to get back to you. Okay? One is directly to the station that you're talking to, and back and forth. The other is the possibility that the signal, even though you're using a beam, is going around the world, and it will come back in on the backside of the beam or the backside of whatever antenna you're using. Because of the delay, so on and so forth, the distance that's involved, you're going to hear an echo, and that echo will be you. Did I understand your question correctly? Over.
Oh, precisely. It's like being in the Alps, yelling across the canyon, and ricocheting off the mountains, and you might be hear yourself one or two times. Who knows? Katie for Oscar Lake, India.
You know, I've done a lot of crazy things in my life, but I have never yelled across the Alps. Thanks, Pete. Go ahead and close it out, Mike, and thank you for being here tonight, sir. KY6V, back to Net Control.
Okay, I see we have two people that have a question. We have KB9EWG, David. David in La Crosse, you're first. David in La Crosse, go ahead with your question. We're listening. Over.
Now, thank you, Michael. I tried to comment earlier, but every time I've tried to get in, it was a double. When Chief was talking propagation, he did mention the ionosphere and ducting. But unless I'm mistaken, wouldn't ducting be in the troposphere? KB9EWG, and this is also checking me in there. KB9EWG, back to you there, Mike.
Very good. Chief, if you're still there, do you want to try to answer that question on the fly? Over.
Well, I did also mention that most ducting happens with temperature inversions, you know, the hot air going over the cold air, creating ducting. Usually you see something like that when you have a front coming in. Also, Mike, NO70 wanted to, and LCB wanted to make comments, whether it's in the troposphere or I couldn't tell you. I'm not that versed in the different spheres of the atmosphere. How's that? Go ahead, Mike, KD0CDQ. This is W4RFJ.
Yes, George has a question too, KW4LCB. George, you want to go ahead with your question?
Well, thank you, Mike, KW4, Lima, Charlie, Bravo. As a few of the guys know, I played with towers and antennas there. And in reference to the angle to the dangle, usually when I set an antenna up, just above the horizon, I will take another nudge and tighten it down just a few degrees above the horizon there. So, and it seems that it has worked out better for me, and have no complaints about the antennas I have set for other folks there, and maybe we could have a Six Victor, or I don't know if I don't think Mike has examined any of my structures there. Maybe he would like to elaborate on the different benefits of just playing with the angles of antennas there. KW4, Lima, Charlie, Bravo.
Thank you, George. Does anybody want to address what George was speaking about, putting the antenna just a little over the horizon? That seems to have worked out for him. Does anyone have any comments on that? Over.
Six Victor here, Mike.
Okay, Gordon, I guess you got to handle that one. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George South. I'm sorry I didn't get the whole thing. Kathy was getting ready to go sack it out. You know, she's got an early morning in the morning getting back to school. But from what I'm gathering is setting the antenna so that it's high enough where you're going to get over the horizon a little bit. And I assume that in those cases you're probably talking about VHF and UHF type propagation by more so than anything antenna-wise on HF. And the radio signal by normal means at VHF and HF will go over the visual horizon to some short distance. That's a proven fact. On HF, there's a lot you can do in changing the angle of radiation. Let me buy a nickel. It's the placement of the antenna, particularly in relationship to ground, okay? It is the type of antenna, particularly, and what its characteristic of angle radiation would be under normal conditions. And you can modify that. Move the antenna up and down, and this and that, and so on and so forth. The only thing that I will say in my practice and my hamming experience, this is all good and it's fun, playing around with the angle of radiation, but about the same time that you decide that you've got the angle that you want, propagation changes and you got to start all over again. Go ahead, Mike, KY6V, over.
Yeah, very good. Antennas are very complex and more complex than they look. I just want to tell George, hang on, we'll get to you with your question. Yeah, like, I'm stuck here in the HOA, and I've got three antennas in the attic. You know, what in the world? So what I'm trying to transmit, I'm jumping back and forth from antenna to antenna to see which one's working better. So I'm kind of playing around, but there is a difference. It's so strange. Even though they're in the same attic, and they're just a little different angle to them, they're very close together. But there is a definite difference, and that's the strangeness about antennas. They've got personalities. Any comments more on that, Gordon?
Yeah. Well, if you're in a situation where you have to put the antennas in the attic, move. I've had my share of time and tenure in HAO property developments, and you can have it. Put me out in the wild by myself. Mike, KY6V, over.
I'm with you. They're so tight in the HOA that my neighbor's daughter has moved in with her from Colorado Springs, and she has her Jeep parked out front, and don't you know, they came and made a comment, she can't leave her Jeep sitting outside in front of the house. It's just not presentable. So she's got to pull her Jeep up into the driveway every night so he doesn't make any comments from the neighbors. Well, that's how life is when you get, that's how life, I guess, goes. Now, I don't want to forget you, George, so please, I know you got a good taxing question. George, would you come aboard with your question or your comments, please?
Thank you, Mike, Katie's dear CDQ and the South Cars General Class assembled tonight in 070. Well, I'm going to change the subject just a little bit. And, Mike, if I'm stealing your thunder, please forgive me, but I wanted to mention we're now on Sunday night, and people are studying or reviewing. They either have licenses or are looking for the general. And I'd like to take a moment to invite people to the South Cars Net and let them be aware of what the operating schedule is for the South Cars VOIP Nets this week. Were you going to do that during your close? I proceed. KD0CDQ and 070.
George, why don't you go ahead with it? That's quite all right. You can give the plan for Tuesday night. Go right ahead. Over.
Well, thank you, Michael. All right, so again, want to invite everyone who's in on the class tonight to come back and join us this coming Tuesday night for more of the general class preparation. The Tuesday night operating time is during classes consistent, but the rest of the year we don't really have a lot on Tuesday night nets at the present time. This coming Saturday, in 6 days, may we please invite you, technician classes and above, to the Saturday morning AM Connection Net, where we get together for fun and camaraderie, enjoy each other's company, check in and start off the weekend, and put off the chores for an hour or two just for the sake of fun of having. That is Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. At 12 noon, we have the Saturday Intercontinental Net Eastern Time, where we have a focus on welcoming people from around the world into that net, different languages, different countries, including down under as well as above the equator here as well. Let me reset. And then on this coming Saturday evening in 6 days, Fred, KQHA, will be opening the South Cars Rag Chew living room for us to go and enjoy each other's company. And, you know, we no longer have to qualify for a minimum number of operating hours each license renewal cycle. We used to have to do that at one time. Not needed. But, you know, the more activity we have on our ham bands, the better we can hold on to them. And that's a very enjoyable way to accumulate some good hammock experience and rag chew time is Fred's Rag Chew on this coming Saturday evening at 7 p.m. And then 1 week from today, again, will be the Sunday night Rag Chew. So come back again this coming Tuesday night for another general class, and come back Saturday morning for AM Connection at 8 a.m. Schedules are posted on scarsvoip.com, Sierra Charlie Alpha Romeo Sierra, Victor Oscar India Papa.com. Thank you for letting me convey this information. Back to you, PK20CDQ, N070.
Very well done, George. This is KD0CDQ. This is the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. We've just completed a session of working the general test questions for the general exam. So I'm going to turn off the recording now, but that doesn't mean you have to go away. We're still going to be here. This is KD0CDQ, and I have a comment to make once I drop the recording. Dropping the recording now.